Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining us as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm, at AH Malcolm on the Twitterses or X's, if you like. And of course, VIP columnist and memoirist extraordinaire at RedState.com. And if you have a great, if you have a great need for Andrew, as I do, you sign up for VIP because that's how you get our VIP gold, so you can get all of our stuff. And anyway, not this stuff because this is out in the open. We always
this keep out this in the open, and so are my memories over at Red State. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, which are great, by the way, and I highly recommend that you, if you haven't seen them yet, just read them all because they're great. And you're getting a sneak peek at Andrew Malcolm's autobiography.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you should think about it.
Well, yeah, you have to have a buyer first. Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that. I haven't written as many books as you, but that is one of the lessons I learned from the one book I did write. You kind of have to have a buyer.
So, yeah.
All right. So I'm going to start with your VIP column because your VIP column came out yesterday, right?
Yes.
And
yesterday and being Sunday.
Yesterday being Sunday. Yeah. Because this will go up on Tuesday. It came out on Sunday. And by Monday, Donald Trump had done pretty much exactly what you said. Remarkable. It's really interesting. Now, your column was, can Trump be the one to finally curb Russia's Putin? Now, he hasn't curbed it yet, but he has shifted significantly on this, especially over the last few weeks, maybe the last month or so.
Significantly. And he's said some derogatory things about Putin, which he hasn't in the past. You know, he talks about wanting to create peace in Ukraine in 24 hours. Of course, that didn't work. But he'd been, in his public remarks, leaning much more towards Russia than Ukraine. And there was rumblings about stopping arms shipment and so on. Well, as I said in an audio last week, Trump is the one guy he's standing up. He's standing up to Putin. He's standing up to the media in the U.S. And Putin seems to have played him wrong. Putin has been able to play every president. In fact, Barack Obama canceled the missile defense system in Eastern Europe without telling the Allies, just as a sign of goodwill. And of course, Putin took it and did nothing in return. So Putin is a taker, not a giver. And American presidents have been reluctant to stand up to him. And now Trump, hopefully this is enduring stance, he's standing up to him. And he's worked out another way to send arms to Ukraine. Those of us, that was my one personal concern, was that we would abandon Ukraine after having stood with them for so long. At this moment, it appears that Trump is all in on thwarting Putin. Now he's given him, 50 days or something to negotiate peace. Whatever it is, if there is peace, it'll be peace, but it'll be a temporary one because they don't stop the Russians. They take what they get now, and then later on, when Trump isn't president, when there's some wussy in there, then they'll take some more. But this is an important change on his part, and I sensed it was coming. I'm glad I was right for a change, and I hope it's enduring.
Ah, you're always right. What are you talking about? You're always right.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I am too. I'm glad because I think this is finally landing on the right spot. And I tend to be a little bit more, what's the right word here? A little bit more gracious, because I think I understood what Trump was trying to do for the last few months, which was that he was thinking that the U.S. had been unnecessarily provocative towards Putin himself, he wanted to sort of sweet talk Putin into, you know, reasonableness, right? And I think he felt that if he took steps to sort of de-villainize Putin, that Putin would respond positively to that with some concessions, right? And especially if Trump was saying, look, we're not looking for status quo ante. What we're looking for is something that will work, right? Something that will stop the war, and then we can get to the negotiating table and negotiate over all of these things. And Putin was, yeah, sure. And then turning around, and it's like, and Trump clearly was offended by this. He said, I get off the phone and I tell Melania, oh, I had a really good talk with Vladimir. And Melania would say, oh yeah, well, another city just got hit, meaning one in Ukraine. And I think Trump doesn't like to be taken for a fool.
No.
And I think that that's really what is behind this, is that he thinks that Putin is taking him for a fool. And
why shouldn't he? Every other president has gone along with Putin stringing things out.
Yeah.
And I mean, Iran learned the lesson. You don't fool around with Trump. And I mean, that it's so refreshing. We got a president who's doing what he said he would do, and a president who's bargaining tough, not just bargaining for face saving and then walking away. So, yeah, it's very promising.
Very promising. And I think that, I think that where we're going here in this change is, and I know people are going to not like what I have to say, but we're going back to where basically the Biden policy was, which was to support Ukraine. We're not going to do it the exact same way. We're not going to just gift them weapon systems. We're going to sell them to NATO, and NATO can do whatever they want with them. NATO's just going to hand them over, but you know, it's a dodge, but it's a, you know, it's at least a sort of a proxy way of doing exactly what the Biden administration was doing in practical terms, which is to ship arms systems to Ukraine. And they're talking about now shipping offensive arms systems to Ukraine, which is something Biden didn't want to do, mainly because he didn't want to provoke Putin too much, right? But it didn't never made any sense to do that. That's basically just managing the losing of a war. And secondly, it sent sort of this signal of weakness. And this comes right out of the Kabul bug out, right? The whole disgrace in Afghanistan. These guys had no balls. I'm sorry, but they didn't, you know, and everybody knew it. Iran knew it, you know, Syria knew it. Hamas certainly knew it. Hezbollah certainly knew it. Practically China knew it. Practically every hostile country and entity in the United States knew that Joe Biden wasn't going to do squat, right? And Trump reset that all, really, was it 3 weeks ago? Is it 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago? I think it's only been 3 weeks ago that, because it was June 21st, right? So it was 3 weeks ago. Maybe it was skosh over 3 weeks ago when he hit Fordo and Natanz and Isfahan. Well, he's reset all of that. So even if you're going, even if you can say, well, all Trump is doing is he's going back to Biden's policy, that may be true.
But
it's Biden's policy in a completely different context, which is right. That we are not going to apologize for exercises of American power anymore. If you mess with us, we're going to mess right back with you. And if you're stringing us along, we're going to make it painful for you. Now, I don't think we're going to drop bombs on Moscow. I mean, I don't think we're going to do that. But he's going to make it very difficult for Russia. He's talking about 100% tariffs on any nation that trades with Russia, which basically means you have to choose between your business with Russia and your business with the United States. And I don't know too many countries that are going to choose Russia over the U.S. under those conditions. It's going to get very painful for Putin very quickly. And I think more importantly, painful for the oligarchs that are behind Putin, which is what we should have been doing the whole time. It's making painful for the oligarchs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It shouldn't be surprising, but Trump is doing what he said he would do, and he's being as tough as he can be. I'm not sure I understand the dodge sending it through your NATO allies, but the the reality, economic reality, is that 90% of the arms that we have sent and will send to Ukraine create American jobs. So right. this is not a gift. I mean, this is basically economic development, and for Raytheon and Northrop Grumman and all the others. And we had let our stockpiles, especially in things like javelins, diminish. So this will get things back on stream, and it's good for our own defense. And then at the same time, Trump is wisely pushing, and appears with some success, European allies to boost their defense spending so that we don't have to do so much of it. And boy, this root, I don't know if you say a Rudy or root, but the head of NATO now, used to be the prime minister in the Netherlands, he's on board 100%. So this is very encouraging. And hopefully we can end the kill. I mean, there's like 1,000 Russians a week perishing, and several hundred Ukrainians, plus the civilians in the wild bombing that, you know, bombing civilians didn't work in World War II. It's not working now. Didn't work.
No, you know, you'd think people would learn that. You'd think people would learn that, you know, it didn't work in World War II. And it never does. All it does is it fires up the population to go out and seek revenge. You have to have an overwhelming advantage before you even start doing that, and for it to have that effect. And the problem with Russia is, on paper it did, but in the first couple of weeks of the war, it became very clear that these guys are terrible at this. They don't have anything more than a brute force sense of military strategy. And the Ukrainians were able to recover in time to mount a defense because of it. And, you know, and I've always said too, that even if Russia had taken Kyiv, right, and maybe even Odessa and Lvov, right, if they'd marched all the way across Ukraine, even if they'd done that, they'd never be able to digest Ukraine. There would have been partisan guerrilla warfare going on, you know, what we call now insurgency campaigns, this entire time. Because where the Russians are at now are ethnic Russian enclaves. As soon as they went into ethnic Ukrainian enclaves, they would have gotten shredded by partisan. I'm not even sure what the purpose of this is, other than to satisfy Putin's ego and to try to recreate a Russian empire that was never terribly stable at any point in history. Let alone over the last 100 years or so. I mean, it's Russian imperialism by another name again.
Yep. And Putin comes out of that era. He was a KGB colonel when the Soviet Union fell. And the story, the narrative has been that the intelligence agencies misled him about how easy it would be in Ukraine. And now, of course, if he loses, or appears to lose, or appears to not get a victory in Ukraine, one way or another, however you define victory, there could be trouble for him domestically. Term limits come very suddenly and lethally in Russia, and the nightmare for the West is to imagine Putin being overthrown and all these little fiefdoms, semi-communist fiefdoms, popping up around that vast country. It's almost twice as big as the U.S. with only 144 million people. And each one of these little fiefdoms would have some nuclear weapons. So there's no guarantee that the replacement for Putin would be better. So it's better that he appear to win but stays, I guess.
Well, and that's what Trump was trying to do. Yeah. Right. And I know it frustrated me too.
He may still do it. Yeah. He may still do it. You know, I mean, he gave him a 55, what was it, 50 day window here.
Yeah. 50 day window. Well, I mean, now it's, I mean, the pretense is done, right? But this was what I was getting at. That was what Trump wanted to give him. He wanted to give him a face-saving way out to where he could make peace and look like he had come out on top, even though really nothing would have changed from 2014. And except for about a million people being dead, that is, you know, because of this war.
And he's, yeah, and he's been siphoning off the children in eastern Ukraine.
Yep.
There have been, as you mentioned, partisan attacks. Every once in a while, you'll see a video of some Quisling Ukrainian propped up by the Russians in his car exploding in eastern Ukraine. But, you know, it's thousands of children, 30, 40,000 or more children, just basically kidnapped, taken to Russia, and Russified and put in Russian families. It's brutal, but that's, I mean, that's, that's what yeah. Putin does. And we don't want him to take on a NATO country, because then we're automatically involved militarily. So much better to sell the weapons, get the jobs out of it, and Ukraine does the fighting, and Russia's military, such as it is, gets depleted. So they don't try this again with Moldova or the Baltic states or even Poland.
Yep. Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, somebody in Moscow has to understand that if they couldn't take Ukraine in 3 years, taking on NATO is a really bad idea at this point in time. Yeah. I think at least that much, I think, has been established.
Yep.
So again, to get back to this, and this is a reason why I think it's significant, is that Trump is really going after Putin personally now. And so the pretense of face-saving exits is gone. That was 5 months worth of openings trying to give him a face-saving exit. Now Trump is just saying, screw it. Either you get out, or we're going to make your life, or we're going to ruin you. we're not going to attack you, but we're going to ruin you. We're going to make sure that you don't trade with anybody. And you can't afford that. They can't afford that. Russia cannot afford to be cut off from trade. Their economy is barely hanging on in any real significant sense anyway. Now, I give them a lot of credit for hanging in there as long as they did. Putin did manage to sort of buffer his economy in preparation for this. But that only goes so far. And
the reality is, it's amazing when Biden wanted to seem tough and you finally succumbed to the pressure to stop buying Russian oil, and that boosted the Russian oil prices. So Putin is getting more out of the boycott on income than he was before.
I pointed this out even before the war started, right? Biden had basically enabled Putin and enabled his imperialism by boosting oil prices with promises to cut off American production, right? And here we are, you know, and Trump understood that. Trump kept oil prices low in order to keep people like Iran and Russia from accumulating a lot of capital, which they could use for the purposes that Iran and Russia had used them during the Biden administration. I mean, the war in Gaza and that spread out, that's also a result of the Biden administration, you know, cutting back oil production, hiking oil prices, giving these guys more income for the oil that they have. And then everybody should remember this. You remember when Biden was running for president and he called the Saudis
pariahs?
Pariahs, right? So what did the Saudis do when Biden came into office? They snubbed them. They wouldn't discuss bringing up production to keep to balance out the price of oil. And Biden had to eventually beg them to help him take action on oil when inflation started kicking up And what gas prices, one of the first things that started rising. And Saudis, we're pariahs.
No, yeah, that's right. The Saudis didn't. And so Biden went to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and took out a million barrels a day for 180 days. That's a lot of oil. And then on the promise that he'd refill it and then didn't refill it. And I think Trump is slowly refilling it now, although it'll cost more. And by the way, what happened to the $18 billion that Biden got selling the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? He never accounted for that. He spent that some way. So that's a lot of cash. It's encouraging at the moment. I hope, Trump is a negotiator, transactional, and I hope that Putin doesn't come up with some clever way that looks like he's caving but isn't really, because there's no trust in Putin. There should be none, absolutely none. We need to stop this annexation now, and we can do it without American troops. So that's win-win as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a win. I mean, I want to see how this plays out. So
yeah,
absolutely. You know, I am, what's the right word? I am cautiously optimistic that we are going in the right direction here. And the reason why I'm optimistic is because, again, I think the context of this policy, even though it's basically the same thing, it's one of the few things I really agreed with the Biden administration's approach, which was to be tough on Russia. My issue was that they weren't smart tough. They were stupid tough.
Yeah.
They talked a lot of crap and didn't do anything. Right.
That's right. Sanctions have not worked since the world convinced South Africa to drop apartheid, which is what, 1992. They haven't really, they may have hurt countries like Iran and Russia, but they don't change the policies. So if Trump's approach forces a change, all the better, huh?
All the better. Absolutely all the better. And what I would say is that we're going in the right direction. I don't know if in 50 days that Putin's going to get the message. But the one thing that you do know, based on this year, is that Trump is serious about those schedules. When he gives somebody 50 days or 60 days, he means it. Yeah. He gave Iran 60 days, and on the 61st day, Israel started the 12-day war, or I should say maybe transformed the existing war into the 12-day war, and absolutely humiliated Iran. And then that ended more or less with us blowing up the three nuclear facilities and ending Iran's nuclear program for all intents and purposes. I mean, they're still talking about, well, there might be some enriched uranium around, and there may well be, but it's buried 300 feet below the ground at Fordo, which is where they were storing it, because it was supposed to be their safest spot. Where else would you keep it?
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing to come back around to that too. When that happened, when Fordo happened, right, Democrats immediately ran to the opposition, right? Yeah. They started talking about Trump went to war without congressional approval, even though Obama did the same thing, even though George W. Bush did the same thing, Biden did the same thing. Presidents going all the way back to Nixon have done the exact same thing. Obama did it more than once. And then one of the times was with Libya, where he refused to even report to Congress about it.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't involve ground troops, so you don't need to know.
The Nobel Peace Prize winner helped topple the regime that the West had promised to leave alone if he gave up his nuclear program, which he did.
Yeah.
And the result was we created a lawless state where all kinds of terrorists now train and head down into East Africa. So. Yeah, good move.
Yeah, good move. You know, smooth loop. That was it, what we used to say on the playground. Smooth move, X-Lax.
yeah. Oh my goodness, that goes.
Yeah, we're not at the jokes of the week yet, quite, but we're getting there. We're getting closer. But So today, being Monday, Harbor Harris Caps poll came out. And I'm going to write about this tomorrow morning. Now, this is a monthly poll from Harris, you know, Harris Pollsters, which is now partnered with Harvard. Not exactly two entities that are not exactly the most conservative entities, let's just say. And there's a brand new 80-20 issue. And guess which one of those the Democrats currently occupies, Andrew?
I think the 20.
It's the 20. And the 80-20 issue is this, the strikes on Iran and Donald Trump's determination to use whatever it takes to keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Well, guess what 80% of the American public, and I mean this literally, 80% of the American public thinks that the U.S. should continue to take all actions necessary to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, and only 20% said we shouldn't be blocking Iran from that capability. 80-20. And on the strikes themselves, it's narrower, but Americans support the strikes on Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan by a 58-42 margin. And most of the opposition here comes from Democrats and 18 to 24-year-olds. All the other demos are positive on this, right? 54% consider Operation Midnight Hammer, which is the official name of that operation, to be a major accomplishment. 46% consider it to be a minor military accomplishment. But I mean, 80-20, this is another 80-20 issue. By the way, the 80-20 issues on all the other things are still the same. It's still 80-20 on deporting criminal illegal aliens. And this is after now more weeks of riots targeting ICE agents, you know, the whole thing in Camarillo, California. You know, Andrew and I used to live in California at different times, but we know Camarillo. Camarillo is really nice. Yeah. I was surprised to find out that there was a marijuana farming operation in Camarillo. I don't know why. I was just surprised.
Yeah. Well, a former marijuana.
Well, it was, yeah. They arrested 361 illegal aliens that were working there. They found 14 children working in the fields without unaccompanied by parents. So they'd been trafficked there to basically be child labor. And they had four or five felons, previously convicted felons. A couple of them had also previously been deported after their felony convictions. And lo and behold, they're there. But, you know, the nutcases went out there, tried to obstruct the raid operation. And a Cal State Channel Islands. I didn't even know there was a Cal State Channel Islands. I'm a Cal State alum, Cal State Fullerton. I didn't know there was a Channel Islands school. Was it floating out there? Isn't that where the goats are at? Isn't Channel Islands where the goats are at?
Yeah.
I don't know. But one of the professors there got arrested. And I kid you not, the California Faculty Association claimed to have been kidnapped by ICE.
Oh, yeah.
And the truth was that he threw a tear gas canister at an ICE agent. So he got arrested for a serious felony. You can do 20 years if the court considers a tear gas canister to be a dangerous weapon. That's 20 years. he'll have a classroom every day at Folsom. I mean, or maybe Alligator Alcatraz. But to get back to this, I mean, the polling here. Democrats have had no impact on these questions. You look at the Harvard Harris poll month after month after month. Now, granted, the Iran thing is new, right? This is the first time it's been asked because it's the first time it's really been an issue, an acute issue anyway. But I mean, on immigration, on biological sex versus, you know, gender assignment stuff. These are 80-20, 70-30, you know, 67-33 issues, month after month after month, and Democrats keep landing and are basically bivouacking on the fringe position. You and I have talked about this before. At some point, they have to be looking at this, right?
Well, you'd think so. It's almost a kamikaze complex. You know, it's like, why did kamikaze pilots wear helmets?
That's a good point.
This is what the Democrats are doing. And it's because the radical left has taken over the party, and winning elections doesn't matter so much, at least now, so much as making a point, showing virtue, satisfying their base. And it's a loser issue. Now, you have to think this is the longest lasting party, the oldest party in Western democracy. You have to think at some point they get the message. But I suppose it might take a shellacking in the midterms to do that. Remember, these midterms are important. Now, this one coming up, it's got two narrow margins in the House and the Senate. But when Biden blew his first midterms, he lost like 80 seats, something like that. And it was a historic turnaround. And you think, oh, boy, well, that was a problem for his legislative agenda. But guess what? It cost them 1,000 elected Democrats at the local and state level. They still haven't recovered from that. And right after that was reapportionment, 2010. And so they lost control of the reapportioning process in many states. And so, you know, Obama was, we all knew, was about Obama, not about the party. But this is an important, democracy needs two viable competing parties. We don't have one now, and we're enjoying the interim, although there's lawsuits and what have you, trying to trouble. It's the only thing they got left. But right now, Trump is having his way, both domestically and internationally.
Well, no, I completely agree. By the way, the thing about why do kamikaze pilots wear helmets, I mean, that cracked me up, but it kind of reminded me of something. Before we get to the jokes of the week, this is kind of a joke, but it's actually a true story. 51 years ago now, that was when streaking, remember the streaking fad?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was the huge fad of 1974, right? 51 years ago. So one of my older cousins was graduating from high school, and we were at his graduation ceremony. This is in Orange County, California, right? And sure enough, they must have had a dozen streakers. They had a couple of them do it individually, and they had a few of them do it in groups, right? And my sister, who was my younger sister, right, had the line of the night. She said, if they're going to run around without their clothes on, why are they going behind the bushes to change clothes?
That's a good point.
Everybody started laughing because, why are they bothering? What's that about? That to me was still to this day hilarious. And I credit her. That was her line. And she was the only one who actually asked that question. If you can take off all your clothes, why are you changing clothes behind a bush? I don't get it.
Yeah.
All right, that does bring us to the jokes of the week. Do you have a joke for us?
I have one.
I've got one, and we have a VIP gold member who has one. So with yours first, and I'll do the other two.
Well, Walmart has announced that it's opening dental offices in some stores, the report is that they're going to have. They're going to have an express line for people with less than 10 teeth.
Well, There you go. All right. This is from our VIP gold member, G.R. Grove. He actually participates in our VIP gold chest. He sent this to me about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I keep forgetting to bring it up. It was for our show. He wanted to contribute. I was like, this is great. And yeah. I kept forgetting. So here's this. He calls it a pagan joke. A bard, a druer, and a seer walk into a bar. The bard says, I will entertain everyone here all evening as long as I can have all I want to drink. The bartender says, okay. Halfway through the evening, though, the bard has drunk the place dry. The druid says, no problem. Does a magic spell to refill everything. And the bartender says, that's amazing. And the seer says, yeah, I knew it would happen. G.R. Grove, thank you for the joke, G.R. Grove. Hope that you are actually watching this episode so I can tell you that we actually told your joke.
That's right.
And I got one more.
If anybody else has any, send them in.
Send them in. Send them to me. Send them to Andrew. We'll read them off. I mean, that was a fun joke. All right. And from jokesoftheday.net, I like this one here. This man is drunk and he's on the road and he's driving down the road and all of a sudden his phone starts ringing. And he answers the phone. His wife is very concerned. She says, Herman, I just heard on the news that there's a car going the wrong way on the interstate. Please be careful. And Herman says, it's not just one car, it's hundreds of them.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, Herman, boy. You might be the problem. You might be the problem, Herman. All right.
If you're all alone going the wrong way on the interstate, you might be the problem.
You might be the problem. Yes. If you are driving the British style and you happen to be in the United States, you might just be problem. All right. Andrew Malcolm, never the problem. He is the prince of Twitter, the regent of redstate.com. Always great to have you here. We'll do this again next week.
Thank you, Ed. You are the master of segues.
So, master of segues. I appreciate that. It's almost as good as being a bard.
Yeah.
You don't get as many drinks, but it's almost as good as being a bard.
The hottest air at Hot Air. Yeah.
Well, there you go too. All right.
All right, Andrew. Thank you, Ed. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.